In this lecture, I would like to show some of the recent results of the excavations of Panjikent. Panjikent, as you know, as we know from Franceworth and from elsewhere, is the so-called etalon archaeological site of ancient Sogdiana. It is located in Sogdiana in Central Asia or in Middle Asia, in today's Tajikistan, very close to Uzbek border. It is located about 60 kilometers east of Samarkand. Here is Samarkand, here is Panjikent. Between them, it is a border between Tajikistan and Uzbekistan, and it is very difficult to traverse it. Now only drug dealers can go from Panjikent to Samarkand directly. If you are not a drug dealer, you have to go through various mountain passes, and it takes 18 hours to go from one place to another. And it is located next to the place where Zirafshan, the main river of Sogdiana, leaves mountains. So Mount Mook, which is very closely related in its research history to Panjikent, is located already in the mountains. And the mouse is not
this.
It's this, not sure. Okay, good. The climate there is different. Panjikent is not completely lowland site. So what is important in the history of the site is that the water here doesn't come from Zirafshan. The water for irrigation is taken from various small rivulets and River Magian, but not from Zirafshan. Zirafshan is lower than Panjikent. Here you see the site as it was in 1970s. The main area is a hill, one of the terraces of Zirafshan, the main city here. And to the left, you see a smaller separate hill, which is a citadel. And immediately to the north of it, the greenish gardens, the spring of Kainar, which is today the holy spring. And before that, it was also maybe a holy spring. But in any case, it existed here for a long time. And we have Neolithic finds from that spot. So in the Neolithic period, the people were also coming to this spring. And a number of suburban area, the village houses, and the necropolis, which is to the south of this aerial photo. The main city, Shahristan, as we call it in Persian, Shahristan, is about almost 13 hectares. So we made the new measurement with GPS, and it was like 1270-something hectares. But the citadel and the other parts also occupy much territory. And as you can see from the previous photo, even in the 1970s, a very huge part of the city already was excavated. The excavation started in 1947 and continued to this day. Why did the archaeologists decide to start working in Panjikent? And now we have to go to real mountains, to the mountain region to the east of Panjikent. 80 kilometers from it is this fortress, small fortress, located on the hill above Zirafshan and its confluence River Kum. It is called Mount Mug. And by accident, a local farmer found here in 1932 a basket with documents. This find was later, it was a long romantic story how it was found, how this herdsman brought it to his village, and then he concealed a large part of them, and the communist leader recognized that it was an ancient find and traced it back, and then an expedition was making work there. And as a result, more than 80 documents came to light. And as apart from them, also numerous material finds end at some point in the late 30s and early 40s with the decipherment of these documents, which are mostly in Sogdian language. It became clear that they were related to Devastish, who was called king of Panch. And so the expectation was, the archaeologists already knew about a site located close to modern Panj Kent, and it was clear that medieval Panj, sometimes Panj Kaf, is Panj Kent today. And so the first expectation to dig there was to find similar documents. But this expectation didn't come into reality. Mount Mook is located in the mountains in very specific climate and with a very specific soil characteristics which allow preservation of organic material. And this organic material does not survive on the lowlands. In the next paper, we will speak about Hisarak, another mountainous settlement where organic finds are also mostly very good. So, at the beginning, the archaeologists did not find documents, but very soon they were compensated by fantastic wall paintings, which become the landmark of Panj Kent. So every year of excavations since 1947, we have some examples of wall paintings of this ancient city, sometimes bigger, sometimes less, but in any case, it provides regularly the wall paintings. Another main feature are wooden carvings, which are found not every year, but in the first year there were many. So here you see the longest wall painting in Panj Kent, the so-called Rustam Hall, very famous. It's only one half of this room, and another half will probably be temporarily exhibited in the coming autumn in Petersburg for a short time. So this is how it looks today, and now we can spend maybe a few pair of minutes looking to how it was found. It is a film made in 1956 about excavations in the center of this Belenitsky, the third head of the expedition. This is Kostrov, the person who found the method of removing, cleaning, and fixing these wall paintings. Another restorer, then we will see Gremyachinskaya making tracings of the... This is the same room in the... state of being opened in 50s. And it thanks to the daughter of Belenitsky, we have a copy of this primitive video. These are demons from Panj Kent paintings. Probably they were cleaned at that moment. And there are also some shooting arrows, So the painters probably were very happy to draw demons because they could make fancy things with them, which was not possible with drawing people or special gods. Yeah, this is the work done, this drawing earth. So many, many workers were working there. Sometime they had rest, and the expedition in its... and its peak had more than 50 permanent members who didn't come into one table, and they had to eat lunch in two courses. So the heads of expedition, the first was Alexander Yurievich Yakubovsky, the head of the Sogda Tajik archaeological expedition, which was found in 1946. Then, after his death in 53, it was Mikhail Mikhailovich Dyakonov, who died quite soon after that. And for many years, the head of expedition was Alexander Markovich Belenitsky. All three of them, I know about them only from I didn't have a chance to meet any of them in person, of course. An interesting feature was that all three of them were not trained as archaeologists. So they would describe their main field as orientalistics, as vostokovedenie, as we say it in Russia. It doesn't have bad connotations as now often in the English-speaking world. During that time, the first fantastic finds were discovered and the work was established, and for more than 20 years, the expedition was led by Boris Ilyich Marshak. Here are some photos with him. On the upper left photo, he is next to Valentina Ivanovna Raspopova, his wife and vice director of the excavation during all that time. And that's the lower, this is how I remember him. Boris Ilyich in 2006 went to the expedition in quite a bad mood and condition, and he expected very much to become better during the excavations. As he usually said, that when I go to Panjikent, I feel myself much better than when I am in Petersburg or in Europe or in America. But at one very hot day, he died during his work, during working with architects and after that there were no other possibilities, and he was buried next to the ancient site, burial becomes a kind of veneration point here. So the people who come nearby, they say Islamic prayers near his tomb and go further. Sometimes they give some gifts like kurut, the cheese, or apricots, something like this. And here in this audience is Amri Aminov, the sculptor from Tajikistan, who works now in Paris for many years, who has an idea which I admire very much, to make a bust of Boris Ilyich Marshak and to install it in Panjikent. So I would be very much happy to do that in the memory of Marshak, who was not formally he was never kind of my teacher, but in Panjikent and in Hermitage, in many cases, in many other places, I learned extremely much from him. So in 2006, the expedition was a kind of interrupted. Marshak was the main drivers, main motor of this expedition, and without him it was very unsure how to do it. So immediately the budget of expedition was diminished more than two times, but nevertheless Valentina Ivanovna Raspopova, his widow, and late Valentin Shkoda, they made small excavations in 2007, and in 2008-2009 the leadership was given to Igor Karlovich Mulkiel, and then to your humble servant. So one of the important features which we managed to continue after Marshak was publication of the reports. So each year we make yearly reports as a book, like 20 to 30 pages of them, like 50, 70 pages of text, and the other are illustrations, and publish it yearly. So all the last parts are also available on the internet. And of course, we try to continue excavations in Panjikent, and what is going to be told in the second part of the paper are the last excavations, which took part last 7 years. You know, it's also a kind of history, so I will mostly speak about what was done in the last year. But because if I look at the archives, at our publications of, say, year 2010, I find there are very many new things, of which I completely forgot in the meantime. So the excavations during these years took part in in 5 spots. The objects 26 and 26S, 26 North, have been conducted since the 1990s. Another excavation, we made very short work on the southern suburb, which was finalization of the work done in the year 2003, and two new objects, so very forgotten objects, Kainar near the spring, and objects 11 East, 11 there, which is located on the northern slope of the site. And now I will describe briefly some of the principal results of the excavations at all these spots. So let's start with 11 there. This object is located on the northern slope of the hill, and this is the drone photo. If you come there and look, you have a beautiful view of the modern city, which is located down the cliff. So that's why we have an unofficial name of this excavation, Belvedere, Bellevue. It is located quite immediately to the north of the temples. There are two temples in Panjakent which continued to live from the very beginning of the city in 5th century until 8th century, with many, many reconstructions, redoings, adornments, and so on. And now it is quite easy to use this material because everything was published in the book of Valentin Škoda about Panjakent temples. They were similar in structure and in form and their development, but then the main question why there were two temples, I think, will never be answered in a definitive way. So immediately to the north of it, there was a street which we didn't touch this year, and several rooms we excavated, a long corridor, an entrance, and two small shops. The architecture there is very... I can take this, yeah? So this is the very long room, 12 meters long, vaulted room, the entrance room with 4 doors, and two rooms of a little shop which was leading to the road, to the street. The architecture there is very solid and very large in size. And one of the surprises there was this entrance room, which we're here you see the bricks. So almost all the architecture in Panjakent is made of mud bricks and parsa, the rammed earth. So it shows that it was a room with vault. It had a vault and it was 4 meters wide. So it is almost the biggest vault known in Panjakent, but in other sites in Central Asia there are bigger ones, like 5.5 meters at El Haras in Khorasmia, for example, or in Taprak Kala. But for Panjakent, it is almost the maximum what they could do. A number of small interesting find, a pottery with the image of a bull, The almost complete one is in the exhibition in Hermitage. This is the bottom of the shaft of the door. So here a wooden shaft was placed in order to open and close the door. The razor, several coins of archaic type, a bone, a shoulder bone with holes. I don't know what is the reason for this thing. And maybe you know what is this. This is, I don't know the English or Russian word for that, or French word in Central Asia. It's suchak. Suchok. Suchak. So it is a... It was put in the for the little child to piss. Yeah. So he was put. He was fixed in the how to say the gahvore kolibel and Berso and fixed to it, and this hole it was fixed to him, and at the lower end there was a small vessel put. It is used until today. This feature I say about him, that the baby is he and not she. This is true because those for girls have a slightly different shape. Yeah, so it's quite difficult to show, you know, the selection of the finds, because the finds are numerous and everywhere, and to find what is better and what is worse, what is more worse showing and what is less worse. So no, they're all like kids, you know? Just one so step specimens of the rich pottery complexes of that place. So this is dated to the first half of 8th century, according to numismatic data, but some shapes are quite uncommon in Panjikent, this one or this one or this one. So it has like kind of special, something special, not in the in the case of date, but in the space sense of the usage of the pottery, of the shapes. And at the a trench beneath the floor realized this small piece, which looks like something completely antiquity thing of first centuries of common era, maybe with lacquering, with polishing, with traces of something looking like a Greek letter. Of course, nobody knows, with decoration, with engobe, and so on. It sounds differently. It's sometimes the image, even the good drawing, a good photo, cannot render the whole story. So you have to take it to put it to your tooth to understand how is it. And so on. The archaeologists will understand that. And the next the next spot, the next sector, object, as we say it in Russian, it's the object 26 North, which was excavated by Igor Malkiel since 1995, and more than 50 rooms in this section have been excavated. And in the last years, we concentrated on the southwestern part of it, between the street and the house here. So here is the northern city wall. It is the later city wall, which was erected by the end of 6th century. The older wall is like 20 kilometers here, to the west of it, and the space between two walls was inhabited much later than the wall itself. So the house which we are excavating was mostly functioning in 740s to 760s, 780s. And another thing which we were and are doing here is the structure of streets and even a square with shops on it. So Panjikent was a very densely populated place. the inhabitants was everywhere. So it was really like a city, like very intense something inside the walls. Like, which, I don't know if there is stone jungles for New York. Yeah, this is mud brick jungle. So everywhere were the constructions. The houses had two or three stories, and the streets were very narrow, and mostly they were vaulted as well, and so the territory above the street, the space above the street was also owned by somebody. I think, I don't know if there was any research about this matter, but I'm completely sure that Sogdians and Panjikent had free trade in immobilities, because the shape of the households, how one room goes from one household to another household, how they're united to one another or separated from one another. And so it all clearly showed that it was the subject of very intense exchange, very intense market. And so it is quite strange, just to finish, only in the temples there were several trees inside the city, otherwise known at all. And so it was very strange to find here quite divide on a settled place, a square, and quite wide streets going in different directions. But let's start with the household, which we finished in the last year. We call it the House of Tishfarn. This is artificial name, but a pebble with the name Tishfarn, son of Vahush Vande, have been found probably here in 2009. The exact spot is unknown, but surely, but somewhere here. It was a relatively big house, but not the aristocratic house. So what we call more or less conveniently aristocratic houses are the houses with wall paintings. Here we didn't have them, as in the major part of the houses in this part of the city. This is the square, which we I told you about, a small shop attached to the square, a pavement here on the street and on the square, and here you enter the house. This room we can call the vestibule, and it survived in a very bad way because it had no less than six doors, and so many walls collapsed from there. From here you could enter the reception hall. Unfortunately, it was without paintings, but the construction, the shape is very similar to rich reception halls with sofa along the walls and four columns and so on. From there we could also come to a living room, a large vaulted room 10 meters long with niche and with sofa, the podium for sleeping all around it. From here we could also go to some household rooms on the ground floor, and from one of them you could enter the staircase. This is the most unusual thing in this house. As I told you, everything was two or even three stories, and for going to the upper floor, usually a winding staircase or winding pound, pandus made of mud bricks was used. Here, contrary to that, there was a mud brick staircase leading to the east, and then there are some traces that there was a wooden staircase leading to the upper floor. In this part of the house, the upper floor survives very good. There were the rooms for grain with alabaster filling, and another probably a large hole on the top of two small vaulted rooms. A number of finds was made here, and including two coin hoards. One of them is a hoard of Bukhar Khuda, coins, they're always only silver coins issued in Sogdiana, although the formerly the main king of ruler of Sogdiana was ruler of Samarkand, the privilege of issuing silver coins was usually limited to the king of Bukhara, the so-called Bukhar Khuda, who issued the copies of Varahran silver drams, but usually it's a low quality and with additional legends and so on. This one, by the way, is Samarkand imitation of Bukhar Khuda drachm with the name of Samarkand King Turgar. I think all of them will be soon or have already been published by Andrea Gariboldi in Silognumorum Sassanidorum. I don't know if the volume has been already published. And a very small hoard of the coins of Bilge. Bilge, Cheginchur Bilge, another the outdated reading of the legend is Bidyan, was the ruler of Panjakent immediately before Devastich on the eve of 8th century. They were found all together and they were produced by two, these coins were produced by two shops. So some of them you see are quite big with legible legend or with weight more than 2 grams. The other are smaller, quite weak, not so well done, and so on. So they were produced by a workshop which was much less fluent. Interestingly, they were all found together in this bundle, in this bundles, which shows that the people who used these bronze coins didn't really care what is good quality coin and what is low quality coin. So everything was good. So when you pay a euro, you don't look what is the quality of this 1 euro coin, right? Here it was the same. And some other iron objects, these are usually explained as something for iron smithing. And this is a very big hoe, quite similar to modern hoes still used today in Central Asia. Now we turn to the next spot, which was excavated by Sharov Kurbanov since 1998. It is Object 26. It was started by Bintovich in 1960s, but then only 3 rooms have been excavated. Now we count up to 56 rooms excavated completely or partially today. It is located to the south of the sector 26 north, which is surprisingly logical. And it is also located in the same block. So this is the late city wall. And here is the street. Some parts of the street were excavated, some are not. So this is this block which has elevations toward the east, toward the city wall. So here are the cross sections of this place, and you see what is the base of the rooms. So the rooms are the closer to the wall are like upper floor as compared to the other ones. The street here is quite high, but in fact the layers of streets, the strata of streets are accumulating very fast, and during the last 25 years of the city it was elevated to in some places to 2 meters. Here I will speak not so much about the spatial things, about the areas, about the organization of households, but rather on some finds which were quite interesting and spectacular. Sorry. Our main finds are, of course, pottery. The pottery is very numerous. It's the main find here, and when we have large number of pottery with large number of coins, we can date the elements of construction to very good. And one of the rooms there, or a block of rooms, gives this large amount of pottery. Interesting is absence of cups, which are very typical to the Middle Ages century, and the coins. A large assemblage of coins was found here too. Also dates it to the period not later than the very beginning of the 8th century. Some of the coins are rather interesting. For example, this is the Sogdian imitation of the Chinese coin Kaiyuan Tunbao. Among many other numerous finds at that place, there was a number of metal objects, especially belt decorations. Here, I'm afraid I'm not giving the exact scale of these things. In many cases, they are different. Some are very well dated. For example, this one, the end of the secondary belt looks like a late Sarmatian or Alanic thing of the first centuries of common era. This is also quite very archaic one. This looks to like old Turkic period. Our colleague Hasan Targoyev is preparing a paper about the belt decoration from the last years in Panjikent. This one is very interesting. This is this kind of Corinthian buckle. Several were found in a Central Asian context, and usually is believed as Western imports from Byzantine, or even sometimes it's believed that the Arabs brought this type of buckles with them. And that is contrary to this buckle, which is the local production. On the 16th object in Panjikent, there was a workshop found where like 20 buckles of this type were found. So it was done, made in Panjikent, not an import. But some other finds from there are even more interesting. Let's start with animals. A rooster carved on the shoulder of a Pithos in a childish but quite expressive way, I would say. A very, very, very small bone figurine of a little bird, the species I don't, nobody can tell, with a very little piece of coral in its eye. A lion, or at least a kind of feline, standing. It was probably the handle of a bronze vessel. It is made in bronze. And two rings. One of them is a silver ring without a gem inside. And another found in 2012, the perfectly complete golden golden ring with a black onyx gem in it. It was in a very good shape of preservation, and all the ladies in the expedition tried it on their hand. So what we see here is the golden ring. So some similar items were found, and also the gem reproduced a man looking to our right and holding something in his hand, or as Franz suggested me earlier today, he just hails with this gesture with his hand. The parallels have been found mostly in Sasanian numismatics, but to my knowledge, they are all oval in shape rather than this rectangular thing, and they are all looking in the opposite direction. So this is, by the way, the only find of gold during the last like 20 years of excavations, and the locals knew about this plant and asked about it. And those who excavate in Central Asia know that when the locals come, they're like, "What are you digging? Did you find gold? How much gold did you find? What we will do if you find gold, we will change it," and so on. So it was a very perfect answer to their questions. "Yes, okay, we found a golden ring this year. It is so and so. It weighs 3 grams, and it is enough for 2 teeth. The find of gold did not make the locals astonishing destroying excavations and so on, as it happened sometime in previous years. And, of course, this part of the city, unlike those to the north, has wall paintings on it, and 2 rooms which were excavated in this part of the city have wall paintings. One of them is just a richly decorated frieze with vegetal motifs. It's a very common type which is found in Samarkand, in Ambassador's Hall, or in Shahristan, Kalai Kahkaha paintings, and many, many, many times in Panjakent as well. It was, you see, in a quite a good state of preservation. And a fantastic thing, which was done by our restorers in the year 2013, was the speed. How did they do it? So it was found not in the beginning of the excavations, but after it was found, like 1 month elapsed, and it was removed, fixed, leveled, and so on, mounted, and after 1 month, it was on the exhibition in Panjakent Museum. So just, I know that the situation here was quite good, the condition of the find was very good, but only 1 month, one field season was enough to make it completely exhibitional. So in some cases, many years of hard work are needed. The next room was richer in its decoration. One room had a similar frieze. And on another wall, on the eastern wall, on the corner, several figures remained more or less intact, and the others have been fallen down in debris, in small pieces. What we see here, it's also after restoration, which took a bit longer time. There are 3 people looking to our left. Yeah, and just like bringing something. One of them, the central figure, who is preserved in a better way, holds a yellow ring in his hand. This is, do you see it? Yeah, I think this is a golden coin, a Byzantine coin maybe. So he is offering this coin to somebody in the center of the room. Another person has a typical Sogdian high pointed cap, and altogether the way of painting is quite archaic. The details, the textiles used here, the big eyes, and so on. What we can do from all of this? So this is the reconstruction of the frieze on the side wall of this room, which is quite similar to the one in the neighboring room, but it has a different shape of of palms in it. These small fragments can be organized in the figures of some people holding something. In one case, he's holding twigs, who are looking not to the to our left, but to our right, so to the center of the room. I think that the image was a kind of veneration. So there are donors from two sides coming to something in the center of the room, maybe the image of a god or something, or a fire altar or something else, but it is now completely lost. And the overview, as I told you, the figures are quite archaic in their representation. One would think that it is the painting of the early strata of Panjikent. But taking into account this developed frieze and most of all the archaeological context of the find, the pottery and coins, it cannot be earlier than 740s. So it is a latest stage of paintings in Panjikent. How could it happen? Maybe they copied some older painting here, or maybe the painter himself was a kind of old fag who enjoyed the oldie style of painting. We don't know. But in any case, we are sure that it was expressed in 740s and not earlier. And the last excavation of which I'm going to speak to you is the excavation near the spring. The spring, which is now the Holy Spring, is located here. It is not only the Holy Spring, but it's functional spring, so it supplies water for the good half of the city. To the south of it, there is the citadel here, and to its east, the main Shahristan, the main city, it is here. So it is significantly lower, located significantly lower. This part of the city was found by accident in 1988. The local authorities started digging a pipeline there, but it came to cultural strata and their work was frozen, and archaeologists came there, and between 1988 and 1992, a number of finds was found here. The principal plan of the site was a large inhabitants, most probably the palace. It is dated to the Panjikent 4 to Panjikent 6, that is more or less corresponds exactly to the 6th century. And room 13 contained paintings. The paint on one wall, on tambour wall, there was this beautiful hunting scene of 6th century, which was known for a long time only in Tracing, which was published by Marshak and Raspopova in Bulletin of Asia Institute. In this year, the restorers of the Hermitage, they finished restoring it, and now it it's on the temporary exhibition. But maybe later it will come to the main exhibition as well. It is a very unusual case of wall painting in the of early Panjikent in secular area, so it is not in the temple. In 1992, after dissolution of Soviet Union, the local authorities, there were no local authorities basically, and they could not control this place, which was very useful for locals as the path for leading cattle for farming. And so it was used for cattle, and then this territory became a garbage ground, very huge, very big illegal garbage ground. And as heap of garbage, it survived from 1992 till 2010. It is located on our way from the from the excavations from the base to the city, to the bazaar, to shops, bars, telephone, and so on. So we passed here almost every second day during the years 1992 to 2010, but not a single photo of anybody I asked, because it was a garbage ground. It was so dirty, it was so unpleasant that nobody would make a photo of that. So believe me that it was a garbage ground until 2010, when the local authorities decided to clean this territory, because here is the, basically the water supply of the not-so-small city. So they didn't have money for that, and they had to give it to owner to lease it for somebody with the so that he will make it his garden, but and consequently clean the territory. But these people agreed that we that in this situation we resumed excavations of the site, and from year 2010 till today we are again excavating here. So this is the main plan. Here is the here is the wall of the prohibited area of water supply. Here is the sale stream, the mud stream, so nothing survives here. And this is the plan of this palace. South of it is the hill of the citadel, and one of the ideas of our work was to find the relation between the between the construction constructions at Kainar and the citadel, which is higher and which has many cultural strata from first centuries AD until Timurid time, but mostly of 7th to 8th century. This is the palace of Devastij. And after some work, we found the corridor in the wall, the so-called Valgang, going to the top to the citadel from Kainar. It was interesting that only after we got a drone and made aerial pictures, we could recognize that what we were digging was visible from the surface. So you see, here is the wall, and here is another wall, and between them a slightly declension, and here is the Valgang. In principle, the pottery from Valgang doesn't seriously differ from those at the Kainar Palace, which belongs to 6th century. But here there were some pottery fragments, this one and especially this one, which shows that it should belong to 7th or even 8th century. There was a coin found here in a very bad state of preservation, but I think that maybe it looks likely to be an Arabic coin, to be a fels, which are common here from 760s. No, I cannot see anything on it, but the weight, the how you turn, you look at it, you turn it in your hand, it looks like fels. It is not cast, it is struck coin, and something like a roundel of pearls is visible there. Difficult to say. But in any case, it seems to be later than the main Kainar thing. But of course, our main interest in resuming Kainar excavations was the paintings which remained in room 13. So the hunting scene was located here, and on the other rooms, the rows of tulips and poplar poppies were found, and only several specimens were taken in 1998. And so we resumed this work, and we got the grant of for cultural preservation of American ambassador in Tajikistan, and in the year 2010 to 2012, we completely removed this wall painting. The work was hard in some cases, and in 2011 we had to organize extra work in October and November here, so it was under the tent, and it was very cold inside, and a little chimney was installed on the place. So you see how much was done here, so how many square meters of a wall painting in each year. These wall paintings were organized one after another in three levels. There was a lower level, middle level, and upper level. The upper level was basically blank. Only at the lower, on the bottom, there was this frieze with a zigzag motif. In Russian, it's called harmonica motif, and very slight traces of something painted above. In some cases, there were faces, and in one, the outline painting of rider, or maybe even female rider, was found here. But it was done by not so much an artistic hand, like an amateurish painting, and very, very pale pink pink color. It is very difficult to recognize the lines of the upper level. The lower two levels had a similar model. So it was a frieze below, and the squares, 35 and 35 centimeters, so one elbow in one elbow, with two tulips or three tulips in a row and small poppies under them. This is the middle level, and here is the lower level. You see that we are working in the garden, and this and apart from tulips and poppies, we have only also pumpkins. The lower frieze and these squares. So the order for making them was quite obvious, so the order was the same, but the expression is completely different. This is the older one, this is the later one. So the shape of the flower itself is different. Here they are kind of wider, and here they are more narrow. The poppies are very different here. Here all of them are looking at the top and are open. Here they are looking to the top, to the side. Some of them are sleeping, some of them have been fallen down, and the difference is also in the leaves and in the twigs. So in the upper level, they are made with black paint. In the lower level, this paint is only very slightly visible in some places. Unfortunately, it's very little, so we couldn't take it for analysis to recognize what color was it. One of the unusual, very, very interesting features of Panjakent paintings is that we never find green color. It's just difficult, very difficult to explain. So many neighbors of Panjakent people knew green color and use it very good, and use it sometimes, maybe used it too much, because Kizil painting is green on green, dark green on light green, but in Panjakent, never. So maybe it is the mix of yellow and black, which was used for green in some later Panjakent paintings, but we don't know. But you see, the expression is different. So it's like one and the same order was given to draw by Mucha and by Van Gogh. Also, this is a bit earlier than this, but the time difference is less than one generation, in 10 years maybe or so. But we see here that the hand of painter was different in two cases. And then we turned to another room. It is difficult to dig here because here is the principal wall of the of the water reserve, and we found here a very similar room. So we see here the size is the same. Here was also an oven located here next to the wall. We didn't touch it. Finally, there is the So far, the podium along the walls, unfortunately, the wall, the tambour wall, the one with hunting scene here is destroyed. But on the other places, we see almost the same. So the upper level with only with frieze, above everything is blank, but the frieze is a bit very slightly different from the neighboring room. And under it also this kind of early tulips. So what do we see? We have two rooms close to one another with entrances to the same corridor, with same with probably same size and same decoration. And I think that these were the rooms of two ladies in the harem of the rulers. We didn't dig here. Maybe there would be a third room of this type. But otherwise, I cannot explain two identical rooms with identical decorations next to one another. So this is actually what we worked on in Panjakent, yes, and in 1 week we will go to Hisarak, so it's 230 kilometers from Panjakent, so in 1 week, so it's actually for medieval traveler it was like 1 week road to go there and to see what happened on that place. Thank you very much.